Welcome into Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Palillo and Sports Talk 790's Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Palillo and at Josh Jordan SCS. On today's episode, the Astros' first road trip is over and Houston ate. That is to say, they ate eight straight L's. The only thing growing as fast as the team ERA is the number of players on the IL. In fact, the team has required so much imaging over the past few days, Alex Cora offered a center field camera. One thing we know for sure is the offense is not to blame. So who is? We'll discuss. Charlie and Josh, welcome in. Can't speak for you guys per se, but if we were told before the season that going into mid-April, Houston would have the highest average, slug, OPS in the AL, and most runs in the majors, I think we would have been pretty confident that the Astros would have had a good record, or at least 500. Instead, they currently have the worst record in baseball, primarily because they have the worst ERA in all of baseball. Adding injury to insult, as is this case, Tatsuya Imai, Christian Javier joined Hunter Brown on the IL now. Pena's hurt as well, but I do want to start with pitching. Do you guys think this is just a bad run by the pitching staff combined with some bad fortune? Or is this the build coming due for a front office that rolled the dice with a rotation consisting of one proven high caliber pitcher and a bunch of question marks they hoped would equate to depth?
Well, I think the Nightmare on Elm Street movies were less gory than the road trip. Just gruesome. Carlos Correa at least called a spade a spade. We can't just talk about all the injuries. We're playing rhymes with kitty baseball. Yes, they are. And the offense kicked in the last two games to that cause as well. On the pitching side, I really don't see a path, minus Hunter Brown healthy and pitching like an ace, for the Astros to have a good rotation. I mean, it's not going to stay this horrible, and the bullpen's been its own nightmare, but it begins with starting pitching appropriately enough. And the Astros, even without the injuries, and Mike Burrows has stunk in three of his four starts. Imai, I didn't know nine innings, actually 8 2/3 innings, could be so exhausting. You hope that's not a calamitous injury, but he was awful in two of his three starts. Then you get to the back end of the rotation, guys. You're just hoping anyway on them. Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez, even with his warts, gave the Astros 375 innings of mostly good work. In Brown's case, spectacular work. That is just too massive a hole punched in a rotation. And the flourishes of spring training in Burrows and Imai, they mean nothing when the games actually start to count. Add in Javier, who's going on 4 years since he was last a good pitcher, and down again. It's just an absolute horror show. They've earned the worst record in the American League at 6-11. You know, they gave up six runs in the finale of the Mariners Monday. Hey, that lowered their ERA to 6.50. Except for the Washington Nationals being horrible, the Astros are worse than a run per game for nine innings. More than a run per nine innings in ERA, worse than everyone else in baseball save the Nationals. It's not going to stay this bad. The Colorado Rockies pitching in that hitter haven last season with one of the worst teams in the history of Major League Baseball went 43-119. Their ERA for the season was 5.99. The Astros, with Tuesday night marking the first inning, one ninth of the season complete at 6.50. It's not going to stay this bad, but going from bad to just very far from good isn't good.
They're in trouble. And sorry, a lot of it just plain is the injuries. When you lose Hunter Brown and Imai and Javier, and you haven't had Hader the whole year, or Bennett Sousa, and Brian Abreu decided he forgot how to pitch this year, has an ERA of like 16. That's just way too many things going wrong. And yeah, they don't have any better depth, but lots of teams aren't going to play very well losing three of their five starters in just a few days. So that's part of it. And when are they going to get healthy? When are they going to get back? We don't know how severe some of these injuries are. You'll be lucky if some of these guys are back in June. I think that would be, hey, yay. But in the meantime, how are you going to get enough wins to stay in this race? They are in big trouble. Whoever they call up from Sugar Land, they may be pitching great in Sugar Land, but a lot of these guys are not pitching very well for the Astros, especially on this road trip here. They are in a huge mess. I think they mismanaged Ryan Weiss. I don't think he's pitched very well, but God, if he's this awful, just try him as a starter. Could it be any worse? You need a starter. Blue Balls has had issues. All these guys. And I just don't see an end here. I don't know if there's somebody you can totally blame. I mean, Dana Brown was just kind of bragging about all the arms they brought in this offseason. Here we are just a few weeks into the season, and they are in a terrible way. I don't know how they get out of it. We know that there's not a lot of talent coming from the farm system, and Spencer Arrighetti, we're supposed to see him soon, but if he was somebody you depended on last year, somebody with some upside, a decent prospect, and they've been reluctant to use him. I understand there's reasons for that, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like they can wait anymore. They need to do what they can right now to win some ball games and turn this thing around.
Pollyanna time. 6-11 is nothing. They go 6-13 in the next 19 games. That will equal the start of two seasons ago, 12-24. Of course, that pitching staff and overall roster was much better equipped to mount a charge from 12-24 to ultimately reel in and overtake Seattle and wind up winning the division. That was then, this is now. At least no one in the American League West is impressed. I mean, 8-7 is a share of first place starting Tuesday's play between the Rangers and the Athletics. The Mariners, thanking their good fortune for having the Astros gimp into town and sent them packing. Right? The Mariners were 4-9 before this series. There's still going to be some up and down, but without a backbone of at least competitive starting pitching, it's tough to really build winning streaks or win 9-11 games when it's a celebration when a starter lasts 6 innings. Yeah, Mike Burrows gave up 6 innings. He was left in there because, what else are you going to do? I think last time out I said the pitching staff, or at least the rotation, both in tatters. At this point in time, they need an upgrade to be in tatters. I mean, they set up for the Rocky series. Colt Gordon was not good in the major leagues last year. He goes to the opener. I think Arrighetti Wednesday because he pitched Thursday in AAA. I'm not sure why they spaced it out like that. And then I'm guessing, Josh, lack of alternatives as much as anything else. Ryan Weiss, who last pitched Friday, so he could have 5 days rest to make the start on Thursday. And then you get to the weekend with McCullers. I think Alexander comes up to pitch the game Saturday. And then back to Mike Burrows on Sunday. I mean, they're just spitting into the wind, Joe Espada, basically trying to fill out the rotation.
Yeah, going back to what you said, Charlie, it's not going to stay this bad. But the real question in my mind is, does it stay bad to some level? Because going back to your point, Josh, about the performance versus injuries, Hunter Brown being out is a problem. But did they have depth to be able to lose him? Like, Imai had never pitched in the majors, so he was a big question mark. And whether it's the weather or the mound or the slick baseball or now the arm's tired, it's really hard to know what's going on with Imai. Burrows was also kind of unproven just a couple of seasons in the league. Hader being hurt sucks, but Brian Abreu hasn't been able to step into the closer spot going back to last season. And then, yes, Sousa's hurt, but he's always hurt. And then Javier's hurt. He's always hurt. So it's hard to blame it on the injuries when this team continues to count on guys who are oft injured. And that's kind of leads into the next point. And Josh, you touched on this, is there's a lot of people right now calling for Dana Brown's head to an equal extent. I think it's rising Joe Espada. Two-part question for you guys. First, what do you think of the job that those two have done? And second, is more specifically, if Houston is below 500 at the All-Star break, does Espada last till the end of the season?
Well, if we're talking about so far this season, Brown and Espada stink. The Astros stink. They're 6-11. But I again caution, it's barely 10% of the season. You know, the Milwaukee Brewers began last season 25-28. They wound up with the best record in Major League Baseball. There are going to be certainly shorter stretches in 17 games qualify where good teams play woebegone ball. And bad teams, hey, look at that team sitting up in the coffin, right? It's what do you do over the longer haul, certainly longer than 17 games. Espada is the guy who could wind up in trouble foremost because that's a front-facing guy you see in the dugout every day, all the post-game press conferences.
And I mentioned it, you know, joshing, pun somewhat intended, or play on words somewhat intended, a couple weeks ago. They have the interim guy. I mean, he's the spot his buddy, but business is business, right? Omar Lopez won the World Baseball Classic with Venezuela. He's an Astro organization guy for 20 years, and now he has some managerial chops. He's the very simple, convenient interim choice if it gets there. I don't think it's imminent unless the Astros are 12-32 or something like that. Dana Brown, I think it's a season-long evaluation. But if Bryce Matthews continues to show very little other than the occasional, wow, he's a powerful young guy who can run fast. Look, they play a little skippy at shortstop. If we played basketball, I think I could post him up. Because Bryce Matthews, well, we don't think he can play a competent shortstop. Your first round draft choice 3 years ago, who's now playing a little bit of outfield and striking out in half his at-bats. By the way, Dana Brown's second round draft choice that year was a pitcher named Alonzo Treadwell, who had major injury history at UCLA. Guess what? He's on the 60-day injured list because he's had injury issues since the Astros drafted him. Right? Dana Brown's foremost charge was resuscitating the farm system and greasing the lines to facilitate player development. And it's not looking so good now. But that he would be gone before we get to the draft this spring, that would surprise me a lot.
I agree. I think they'll take their time with this. We know Jim Crane. He likes to get his money's worth. So if he's paying somebody, he wants them to actually go out there and do the job. And we talked about all the possibilities of lockouts and all these other things. And we are in April. But my problem here is, guys, I don't see a way out here. I don't see Javier coming back and being effective anytime soon. Hunter Brown, we just need him to get healthy, but who knows how long that could take. And with Imai, you're counting on him, especially with what Mike Burrows has given you. If his ERA is going to be 6 for the whole year and you're just happy he can give you 5 or 6 innings, you are in some serious trouble here. That's where I don't see where the magic bullet's coming from to help this team. Even Arrigetti, I'm just like, that's nice and all, but how about, are we just going to count on McCullers to keep going out there and posting up every 5th or 6th day? Because that sure hasn't happened a lot in the last few years. It's just, I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop. That's kind of where we are right now. And some of this I do put on how they've handled some of these guys. And, you know, I think it was Sparky said something about how, you know, Hunter Brown throwing 98 miles an hour in these spring training games. Like, do you really need to be upping it, throwing 98 this early in spring and in March? Maybe 94 is okay for now. Let's wait till the real games start before we're doing that. And with me, with Pena, rushing him back with the finger and then hardly even playing him when you do bring him back. And then what happens? I know it's a completely different part of the body, but he's injured and he's not playing now. Had you have just put him on the IL to start the season, he probably would have come back, and I don't know if he would have run into this issue. A lot of these decisions, they don't make a lot of sense to me. And the Arrigetti stuff, if you need a pitcher to break your losing streak, try him, not these other guys that have never really done anything in the big leagues.
Frame it this way. With Hunter Brown down, the Astros don't have one starting pitcher who would sniff cracking the Seattle Mariners rotation. And in that Seattle series, the Astros didn't even face the Mariners' best starting pitcher, at least off last year, the All-Star, Brian Wu. But if Javier were healthy, he's not in the Mariners' rotation. Burrows wouldn't be. Imai hasn't done anything to suggest, oh yeah, he would supplant Logan Gilbert or Luis Castillo or anyone else in the Mariners' rotation. It's code red time for the starting rotation.
Yeah, and look, I don't think the solution is Omar Lopez unless it was a spotless plan for everyone to go on the IL.
This is a hell of a slider and curveball.
Look, Espada is playing the cards that he was dealt. The difference between the season is not whether or not he's leaving in McCullers and putting in Oker. They gave up 75 runs on the roadie. Charlie, you nailed it when it comes to Brown. It's just his drafts have been underwhelming. The signings of Walker and Hader have been a very mixed bag. Cam has shown enough promise that maybe the Tucker trade was not in vain. So that's a bright spot. but it's not looking good for either one of these guys unless there's a giant turnaround that happens. I do want to get to the bright spot, which is the offense. But before that, let's take a minute for StoneColdCruise.com. That's where you get in contact with Nat Latman at Cruise Planners. Nat can help you with more than just cruises, but there's no debate that bang for your buck. Few vacation options are more budget-friendly and comprehensive than a cruise. Airfare and hotels are so expensive right now. You think that's going to go down anytime soon? Look, have you looked at prices for Vegas? The truth is, in many cases, a five-day Caribbean cruise sailing out of Galveston is cheaper than a weekend in Vegas. You want a casino? You want shows, water slides, pools, sports areas, all-inclusive buffets? Cruises are the way to go. And the best part is Nat's exclusive deals can save you hundreds of dollars versus booking yourself. His service is free and his low prices are guaranteed. Go to StoneColdCruise.com, fill out the form, and let him know what you're looking for, or call him and Jenny directly at 281-892-1150. Make sure you tell him you heard about it on Stone Cold Stroh's. Gents, let's put the blinders on for a second and just look at the offense, because like I said, the team's offense has looked great. Lots of positives that we had hoped to see, whether it's Yordan, Altuve, Correa, Walker, Smith, Loperfido, all carrying good numbers. Even Christian Vasquez has a 984 OPS with 8 RBI. Pena and Paredes have scuffled a bit, and now Myers and Pena are on the IL, and Christian Walker does seem to be a little bit banged up. But is what they're doing on offense sustainable enough to have hope of turning the season around? Should they be able to get the pitching side of things figured out?
No, it isn't. They're not going to keep scoring over 5.5 runs per game. And again, small sample size, and we talked about this last time out, playing 6 games already in Colorado and in Sacramento, tremendous hitters' ballparks. Altuve is not going to have an OPS of 924. Yordan is awesome. His OPS isn't going to be 1,200. I'm damn sure betting under 901 for Christian Walker's OPS, where he stood coming out of the Seattle series. The offense is going to decline. The pitching's going to get better or less bad. So is there more improvement possible within the pitching to more than offset the tapering down of the offense? Look, I mean, even in the Seattle series, they scored 1 run on Sunday and then 2 runs on Monday. You can't ask Yordan to be superhuman every game offensively. He went hitless the last 2 games of that series. One of his home runs was a 3-run shot in a game the Astros were down 9-3. No offense can be asked to put up 6 runs plus per game to give you a chance.
100%. I'm with Charlie on this, that they can hit all they want. The pitching, if you keep giving up 6, 7, 8 runs every game, that's just not sustainable. I don't care how good the offense is. And yeah, a lot of these guys are going to fall off. We know how streaky Altuve can be. There'll be peaks and valleys during his season. So I'm just concerned, because you only have a handful of guys. Like Brian King's been good this year. And I keep going back to the pitching here, Brandon, but I don't know what else to say. Yeah, Correa, yeah, and Altuve and Yordan and Christian Walker. Hey, it's fun. And it'd be nice if Paredes would come around, and even Christian Vasquez has done okay with the bat. It's fun to watch when that happens, but also they're down 6 or 7 pretty early in a lot of games. I mean, that just kind of breaks your back when you know, even if we come out here and put a rally together, it's just not going to be enough. And you see a different type of pitching when teams are way ahead of you. You're going to see a lot more strikes and fastballs. And that's the real thing here, guys. I can't believe we've gone this far without talking about it. The walks, they are just walking anybody and everybody. And the strike zone's a little smaller, it looks like, this year because of ABS, and hitters are a little more willing to roll the dice and not swing at close pitches. You have to know that going in. And most of these guys are pitching scared. And even guys like Abreu that have nasty stuff seem to be afraid of the strike zone. I don't know if that's a coaching thing, if that's a mentality thing, if the pitchers just are missing with their spots. We don't know. But until they get that corrected, it's not going to matter, because it's not that big a deal if you give up a solo home run. But if you walk a guy and then a bloop hit happens, how many bloop hits have we seen lately? And then the 3-run homer comes after that and absolutely kills you. You can't live like that. And that's why the results are what they are.
The Saturday game, where they puked away the 7-2 lead because McCullers lost it. And then, all right, Julio Rodriguez turns out wasn't going to go the entire season without a home run. So he gets Okert to tie the game.
then you actually get three scoreless innings of relief to the ninth inning, and then, here comes Brian Abreu to walk the freaking bases loaded. Then he manages to get ahead of J.P. Crawford 0-2, but another factor of when too often you have no freaking idea where you're throwing the ball. There's Wild out of the strike zone, walking everyone and his brother, and then an 0-2 pitch right in the heart of the plate that Crawford's able to get it into the outfield for a game-winning single. I don't remember the exact numbers, but something like just the 11th team since 1900 to give up six walks per game over the first 16 games. A little bit of a contrived set of numbers. Nevertheless, those are the numbers. Walking people at historically incompetent levels. Hey, Monday, Mike Burrows only walked one in his six innings. Yeah, he gave up 11 hits and six runs in his spot after the game. I thought he threw the ball really well, and he only walked one. Yay for that.
Josh, going back to what you said, you know, the strike zone has been smaller for everyone other than Yiner Diaz, who's still swinging wildly at everything. He did have a solo homer and an RBI, respectively, in the last two games of the roadie, but he's just really had a terrible opening to his season. And speaking of ABS, I don't think he understands the strike zone, considering the fact that his challenges have been so poor. Many of us had hoped would be the catcher of the future, a tentpole for this team. Was Dusty right about him, or was his rookie season fluky? Like, what is going on with Yiner to where this is the player he's become?
I think it's two things. I think they expected him to get better by now at actually being a catcher and framing pitches and calling pitches and doing all that, throwing guys out, all that kind of stuff. And that hasn't really come along. You get the feeling that all the stuff that Maldi did with calling games and game plans, that maybe Yiner's just kind of disinterested in that type of stuff. And then the bat, you love the power. The power's still there. It's just he swings at everything. And big league pitchers, they're not going to throw you strikes if they don't have to throw you strikes. And I don't know how you fix that. He's got to get more patient. If Altuve can get more patient, he can too.
Yeah, after his rookie season, clearly the league got around to, okay, let him get himself out, because he will a lot. And Yiner doesn't strike out very much. You know, he's pretty good at bat to ball, but too much weak contact and chase. You know, he will flail and miss terribly within it at bat. But I believe it's only 8 strikeouts in his first 51 at bats, or maybe 11 strikeouts, a much lower strikeout percentage than scads of other players. But Yiner, 51 official at bats, he's walked 3 times. That's improvement for Yiner Diaz. I fear he's a little bit comfortable. I don't think he can go this route. Well, you could, but I'd be stunned if they did. Yiner rhymes with minor, as in leagues. I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world to send him a message. Go down there, learn to take a pitch here and there. And I think you nailed it with just not knowing the strike zone, translating to a couple of his bad challenges behind the dish. And you know, I don't know if a little baseball shock therapy would work, but you graph his career, it's a ski slope, as in downhill in the worst of ways, as opposed to speeding to the finish line.
All right, well, Houston heads back home looking to turn around this awful stretch as they host the Rockies, who just swept them in Colorado and then went on the road and were swept themselves in San Diego. What will you guys be looking for in this series?
I mean, I'm not going to call it payback. It's no semblance of a rivalry, even though the Astros and Rockies play two series every other year. Are they going to get starting pitching that doesn't need a laugh track? And the Rockies don't have a good offense. When you're going Gordon, Arrighetti, Weiss, it doesn't conjure up memories of Clemens, Pettit, Oswalt, or Glavin, Smoltz, Maddox. But this is what they have, and they're taxing the bullpen, going to it so early in so many games. In fact, I haven't seen a stat. Get cracking, Elias Geeks. Take out the openers that we've seen in recent years. And when was the last time a team had a starter not go more than one inning in 3 out of 4 games, as just happened to the Astros, Thursday through Sunday? I mean, the rubber band is stretched to the point that it has broken. Is there mending? You are the most beautiful optimist in the world if you think the Astros pitching's all right, it's going to sort itself out. It could, but what reason is there to expect it to, unless Hunter Brown gets back a lot sooner than later and gets back as A-game Hunter Brown?
Yeah, as long as you're running out who they're going to be running out there, you're just going to be happy if you're still in the game by the fifth, sixth, seventh inning, like if you're in striking distance, because that's just what it's shown you lately. And it's not fluky. These guys aren't proven good major league pitchers. We shouldn't be expecting those results from them. That's just where it is. You're not like the Mariners where you could just throw out ace after ace after ace. It'd be nice if you could, but that's not in your farm system. They have been hesitant or just basically not at all willing to spend big money on pitching. And I'll get into some of that here in a little bit later, but this is where they are. They got to count on Hunter Brown getting healthy and coming back. And they need Emi to matter too. They need him to be a top of the rotation pitcher if they want to be serious about making the postseason this year. But right now, they just got to get back to 500. And that's quite a climb.
I'll just be looking for if the home cooking helps, because they looked okay at home. Part of that was the Red Sox have been terrible to this point. I think maybe we overvalued what those wins were worth, but you can't go into Daikin and let Willie Castro, Mickey Moniak, and TJ Rumfeld knock you around the way that they did in Colorado. So if that's the recipe that's going to happen in Houston, that is a bad sign for the season. It's a bad sign for the franchise. Final thoughts before we're out the door.
Well, if you're audio only, you won't get the prop, but salute time. Phil Garner passing Saturday, 76 years old, not young, but not nearly old enough. Obviously, this platinum era of Astros baseball transcended what Phil Garner managed in 2004, 2005. But a quickie recap. At the All-Star break in 2004, the Astros were 44-44 and just hamster on the wheel going nowhere. Fired Jimmy Williams, who was actually generally well-regarded by players, but his public skills and as a front-facing manager, miserable. Phil Garner, a 180 personality, just a delightful guy, as good a storyteller as I've ever encountered. Back in that time, I had Phil weekly on the show, and it was just one entertaining slash insightful story after another. And then it got to the baseball. They hired Phil Garner, and here comes the turnaround. No, the Astros started 12-16 under Garner. They were 56-60. They were still seemingly going nowhere. Garner himself said, yeah, I thought it probably was time to sell off. Carlos Beltran, free agent to be. Jeff Kent, free agent to be. But they decided to play it out, and it's not because of the manager. Nevertheless, when you are the manager and you go 36-10 down the stretch, a finishing kick like Secretariat to make the playoffs, then next year 15-30 in the tombstone, then they go 74-43 the rest of the way and finally break through and go to the World Series. And yes, they lost it, but they got there, which was a huge step in Houston's baseball history. Phil Garner, going back to his playing days and then as a manager, he is locked in Astros lore, but so much more than that, as just a delightful human being and guy to get to be around and talk about a little bit, talk with over the years. And Phil Garner, the player, most notably the figurine there, Pittsburgh Pirates, 1979, the famous We Are Family team. Phil Garner hit 472 that postseason, 417 in three LCS games, then a cool 500, 12-24 in the World Series. For those who buy into the clutch gene, Phil Garner had that too. Rest in peace, Phil Garner. You will be missed by many, many, many.
Well said. Mine will be a little more on the diamond in the owner's box, if you will. Pitching's the issue, right? You let Fromber walk, and they had reasons for it, and some good ones, maybe some not so good ones, but it's a lot of money. Pitchers get hurt a lot. And if we look at what Jim Crane has been witnessing with his checkbook, Dana Brown comes in, oh, buckle up your seatbelts, fasten your seatbelts, we're going to pay some guys. What'd you do? You paid Javier. How's that worked out so far? Not great. He's been hurt a lot. McCullers, they locked him up several years ago. He's missed a lot of baseball since he signed that big contract. And then you look at Josh Hader. First year, just wasn't that great. Ryan Pressly got killed that season by the fans. He actually had a better ERA than Josh Hader. And then Hader finishes last season injured. Can't help you trying to make the playoffs. Starts off this season injured. Can't help you. There was all this talk this offseason about, oh, why hadn't Hunter Brown and his agent, why hasn't Boris been talking to the Astros about an extension? Where's Hunter Brown now? Hurt with a strained shoulder. So I get that pitching is critical, and you're going to have some bad contracts. Guys are going to get hurt. It's baseball. But if you're Jim Crane looking at the results of the guys that you paid to stick around here and pitch, hasn't been working out. Hunter Brown's a different story. It's hopefully this is just a minor deal. He hasn't been an injury prone guy before this, but just point being, if you're Jim Crane, you're thinking, where do I want to spend my money? Pitching hasn't been a great option for him. And Justin Verlander missed a lot of time, almost forgot that one. So it's bit him a few times.
And we'd looked at Justin Verlander. We'd bounce it around as an option. He's on the IL as well. Charlie, I do want to continue your thought on Garner, because I had the privilege of interacting with Scrap Iron a few times as a fan before I got into media, and then after, when he would come to the station from time to time for interviews. And he was just always really the most down-to-earth, humble dude you'd ever want to meet. And before those 2004-05 seasons, been a whole lot of heartbreak for the Astros. And yes, they ultimately couldn't close the deal those seasons either, but those teams were so exciting. And having him as the face of those teams, along with Bidge and Bags and Oswalt, Clemens, Pettit, and a bunch of other guys, it made an impression on me. And I've said it before that's when I just really like lit that fire under me to pursue my career in sports media. And that's putting aside the numerous other media personalities that were also big influences. But, obviously there was that big lull between then and the rebuilding years, but I wouldn't have had the privilege of covering the Astros during these platinum years, Charlie, as you coin it, had that team not lit the fire under me the way that it did. And so it's not to make it about me. It's just my personal testimony of how much sports can impact our lives. So as you said, rest in peace, Scrap Iron. You will always be a legend to me and the city of Houston. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcast apps like Apple or Spotify, please consider giving us a 5-star rating. For Josh and Charlie, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening. As always, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.